June, it's LGBT. I suppose we need to put the Q on there now, too. Let's just say it's Pride Month here in Chicago. In the studio with us, I'm going to do it in two little things here. Publisher of the Chicago Reader newspaper, Tracy Baim. Now, Tracy, you also are owner and co-founder of Windy City Times.
Yep.
That's been around how long?
Since 1985.
Oh, my God.
Third of a century.
Yep, I was 22 years old.
Wow. Now people are doing the math.
56.
Wait a second. Oh, okay. You did
that. That's unbelievable.
Congrats.
All right. Well, a lot's changed since the Windy City Times first was published, hasn't it?
Oh, my God. The speed with which our community has seen progress is thanks in part to the prior civil rights movements. We very much, as a community, built off the learnings of the civil rights movement and certainly the women's rights movement, and including when AIDS came, reared its horrible, ugly head in the early 1980s, a lot of the success of the women's health movement and the reproductive rights movement fueled the work against HIV and AIDS. So really, our success is 100% thanks to the prior movements and also to some really amazing, courageous people who laid their lives on the line for LGBTQ rights.
All right. Why is June Pride Month?
The end of June in 1969, there was a raid on a gay bar in New York City called the Stonewall. It was a mafia-owned bar, like a lot of the bars in Chicago were mafia-owned, or at least mafia-controlled. And oftentimes, there'd be these scheduled raids that with the police, like there were like before elections and all sorts of other things. And in New York City, it was no different than in Chicago. So there was a series of raids that had happened, including earlier that week. And some people attribute it to some sadness around the death of Judy Garland, and other people say it was just a hot night in July and people were not going to take it anymore. A lot of transgender, or might have been called drag queens back then, of color, as well as some butch lesbians fought back, white gay men, all sorts of parts of the community were hanging out in and around Stonewall. They may not have been in the bar, they might have been hanging on in the park outside. And when the police came in, tried to get cards and you know, arrest people, the community fought back, and actually the police had to barricade themselves in the bar before reinforcements came, and some police were actually fleeing, running away from the crowd. So it was really the biggest rebellion to date for the community. There had been other fits and starts of a movement for many decades, including in Chicago, but Stonewall was really seen as this line in the sand. It came out of the Vietnam War movement and civil rights movement. People just said, no, it's my turn. I'm going to fight back for my rights.
That was such a volatile time, Vietnam War, and then afterwards. Now, what is similar to that here in Chicago?
So what's interesting is Chicago in 1924, a courageous postal worker named Henry Gerber, who had fought in World War I, actually had been forced to go into the war or go to a psychiatric institution to be cured of his homosexuality. He was a Bavarian immigrant. He went to the war. He learned about homosexual rights in Germany when he was there. A man named Magnus Hirschfeld is one of the pioneers of homosexual movement. So when he came back to Chicago in 1924, he got a few people together and they started a Society for Human Rights. It's the first known gay rights group in the country. They were shut down very quickly. They did publish a couple newsletters. He was arrested, as were some of his colleagues, and the organization folded. But subsequent organizations started over the country, and a group called Mattachine Society out of Los Angeles eventually had chapters, and Chicago started two or three different times. It started Mattachine chapters here. We had a Daughters of Bilitis chapter, which was for lesbians, starting in the 60s. So there were, Chicago is very connected to the national movement. Pre-1969, there were maybe 200 or 300 activists around the country who would use their own names, be pictured in the media, be willing to really tell their stories. They were buffeted by thousands of others who might have been supportive, written a letter to the editor, things like that. And so Chicago in 1964-65 was fighting against its own police raids. The Funhouse Lounge in the suburbs was raided. The names of people and their professions were printed in the mainstream media. People lost their jobs. A lot of teachers.
What to say these people?
These people were arrested at, for acts of, lewdness, perversion, whatever the words might have been. And so people lost their jobs, marriages, custody of children, and some people committed suicide. Jeez. This happened over a period of many years. So Mattachine Society's Chicago chapter did a newsletter in the 1960s so people could find out about those raids and the response. They were trying to meet with police. There was a raid on the Trip Bar in 1968, which was a downtown gay bar, soon before the Democratic National Convention. And the owners hired an attorney who actually just recently passed away, Rolla Klepek, and she fought it all the way to the state Supreme Court and won. So there were we were fighting back in many ways in Chicago through institutional homophobia. There weren't a lot of like external protests and pickets and things like that in Chicago, but there had been ones that Chicagoans would go to in other cities. In Philadelphia, there was an annual reminders on the July 4th weekend. Gay people would picket in front of the Independent, in the front of the Liberty Bell, and so we were connected to that movement. There were people who, some of them very recently passed away, who were part of that national push for gay rights, representing the millions of ones who couldn't come out at that point in history.
Tracy, we're at a time right now where the mayor of our city is openly gay. One of the front runners running for president, Pete Buttigieg, is openly gay. Did you think you'd see this?
And adorable.
And adorable, was one you will point out. Did you think we'd see this finally in 2019? Are we ahead of schedule or are we behind schedule?
You know, if you would have asked me in 1984 when I graduated college and there were four openly gay journalists that I'm aware of in the entire country that weren't working at gay papers or other alternative papers, I would have said it would have taken longer. But I think what happened was not only did we benefit from prior civil rights movements, but the AIDS crisis really forced society to acknowledge our existence and also forced ourselves to out of the closet and to say our lives are worth more. Our lives are worth fighting for. And the lessons of fighting back during the AIDS crisis really fueled our movement for everything from LGBT rights itself to marriage equality to fighting to be in institutions like the military and other places. I think we can never know the impact of the AIDS crisis, but I think we can tie our successes in terms of accelerating the movement to those lessons learned and those lives lost. So we wouldn't probably be this far along. It might have taken another couple decades. Had it not, I mean, tens of thousands of people came out as a result of the AIDS crisis. Many of them lost their lives, but others were just empowered by that moment. They said, you know, people were losing custody of children when a partner would die or losing their homes, losing their jobs. They realized that there were rights worth fighting for that had a day-to-day impact on their lives. So I think that if you know, later in the mid-90s, I would have said, yes, it would be possible, because we had our first openly gay elected official in Chicago in 1994, Tom Chiola, for judge. And now we have dozens of openly gay judges. We have state reps, aldermen, 10% of the city council had been gay before this election. I think it's now just under that. So we've seen that progress. Mm-hmm. Mayor of Chicago, though, I mean, that's a big deal.
I love it.
And of course, having an openly gay president, because we've had gay presidents, having an openly gay president would be unbelievable, right? As a lesson and a kind of bellwether. I think the Democratic Party in particular is much more sophisticated in ways that it supports people. There were gay people that were for Tony Preckwinkle and gay people for Lori Lightfoot and all sorts of things. I think people are realizing you can be single issue when it matters most, but really we're a multidimensional community and we have Republican gays and we have Democratic gays and independents and socialists and everything else. And sometimes it matters and many times it does not.
I have a bunch of questions. It is Pride Month here in Chicago and everywhere else. And we are talking to Tracy Baim, owner and co-founder of Windy City Times, 34-year-old newspaper. And you are also publisher of the Chicago Reader newspaper now. We have more questions for you. It's all happening right here on WGN. We are celebrating Pride Month. It's June. Tracy Baim is with us. She is the owner and co-founder of Windy City Times, also the publisher of the Chicago Reader. And I want to know where the first, at that time it was called the Gay Pride Parade. Where did it start? Where was the very first one?
And it is interesting. So to celebrate to mark the Stonewall anniversary, four cities in 1970 had Pride, what we call Pride events. In Chicago, we actually had the first one because we were on a Saturday and Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York were on a Sunday. Ours was at Bughouse Square, and then they marched downtown. Very much marches in the early years, you know, a couple hundred people, and it slowly grew. By the late 70s, Anita Bryant came through town, and there was a big protest in early June at my Medina Temple, where she was going to be appearing. And out of that, the Pride Parade really kind of took off. Tens of thousands of more people came to that year's Pride Parade. People started to get much more energized by the late 1970s, and there was actually a March on Washington for gay rights in 1979. It was the first one.
When you hear about Boston wanting to do a straight Pride Parade, what is your reaction to stuff like that?
Well, you know, certainly anybody has a right to march.
Sure.
I think usually it's a very dishonest approach to what that is. They really aren't doing a deep analysis as to where the bias is. It would be just like having a white Pride Parade or, you know, a non-immigrant parade, I guess.
Yeah.
People just really are, it's an insult, really, to the people that have lost their lives because of discrimination, lost their jobs, their families, etc. It's a joke, really, right? Really, I don't know. I just think it's silly.
Yeah.
Let them do it. They have every right to march. Everybody does. Even the horrible KKK does. This is a free country. That's what we fight for. That's what gay LGBT people have been putting their lives on the line for, the right of those straight people to be jerks.
Yeah. All right.
That's the bottom line, jerks.
Very fair.
And to somebody listening right now that is gay, that doesn't feel they can tell their family yet or friends, any advice?
You know, part of that depends on the age they are. If you're still dependent on a family structure for your safety and your, you know, living, right? If you're under 21, and this generation is coming out so much younger, the average age in my generation, I'm in my 50s, that came out was really usually in college or right after college when you're not as dependent on family. People are coming out at 5 years old as transgender, 9, 10, 11 as LGBT. It really does matter who your family is. And familial homophobia and transphobia can be some of the most damaging that exists. It's something that a lot of other communities don't have to face. You know, that you have this someone who is not like you that's raising you. And that's, so I would say be safe first. There's time later. There's going to be a right time if you don't feel like you're in a family structure that's safe for you. But there also are tremendous resources out there. So in Chicago, we have the Center on Halsted, which was Howard Brown Health, both of them healthcare institutions. Center on Halsted is also a community center, but they do have counseling services and referrals. So those are two organizations I would recommend. There's dozens and dozens of different organizations. So if you can get to some of the LGBT events this month, there are probably about 100 of them. There's different events. The Chicago Reader has a Pride Fest that's all ages. It's safe for all ages. 10 and under are free. And bring your family to that. If you do have a supportive family, it's going to be Sunday, June 23rd at Mars Brewing Company in Bridgeport. There's the Pride Parade the last Sunday of June every year, the Dyke March the day before, and dozens of other events that are happening. And Windy City Times and the Chicago Reader and other places have calendar of events. So start exploring what the community is and what it means, and slowly tiptoe out. If you're in a situation where you're married and there are kids involved, again, get advice. Don't make that leap until you know your bases are covered and you're safe. That's the most important thing.
That's great advice. You have a book here that Bill was looking through.
Very impressive.
How many books do you have out? And you are such a historian on all things Chicago.
You know, I feel like I definitely am a journalist type historian. The way I document things is very much like a journalist. And part of the reason I have felt compelled to put this material down, not just in newspaper form, but also I have a video website called ChicagoGayHistory.org that has 200 oral histories. I've been compelled ever since I started doing this work at age 21 to get the voices and the words down of people who were dying and also historians who were dying. There were Greg Sprague, who's helped start the Gerberhardt Library in Chicago, which is an amazing LGBT archive. He didn't get a chance to live past the 80s, right? So I'm amateur at it, but I'm just compelled. I have a compulsion to make sure these stories are told. Many of my friends have passed away as well, of all different reasons, but including HIV/AIDS. So when I was a first approached to do this book out and proud in Chicago, it was because WTTW was doing a documentary on the movement a few years ago. And a company said, hey, would you do a book for that? And they said, well, Tracy's got a lot of stuff. And so was kind of happenstance, but we approached it like a journalistic project. So we signed out 150 articles. I did about a third of them, and then other reporters did pieces. So it's a snapshot of our history from the late 1800s to about mid 2007 or 8. And I love doing it. It was kind of like taking my brain and just doing a brain dump so that I can have it all in one place, because I can't keep it all so quote straight. And then I've done 11 other books that are usually either biographies of pioneers like Vernita Gray, who's passed away, a pioneering African-American lesbian activist, Chuck Renslow, a white gay businessman who started in the 1950s with a gay leather bar, the first in the country. So I've done biographies as well. Jim Flitt, the owner of the Baton, that was a really fun biography. I did those with Owen Keenan, who's also another historian in Chicago. Victor Salvo, who does the Legacy Project on Halsted. If you haven't seen it, it's the world's only outdoor gay museum. It's placards that are on the red pylons on Halsted Street. There's some phenomenal people documenting this work. We could use more. And luckily, a lot of the younger generation really cares about these stories in a way that we didn't even know they existed. Chicago just passed, Illinois just passed an inclusive curriculum bill. It means that LGBTs need to be taught in our public schools, and California has done this already in one other state. It's really important because I was never taught this stuff, and most people haven't been taught this stuff. You have to seek it out. And without it being proactively taught, people don't understand that we're not these obscure exceptions to the rule, that LGBT people are fully integrated in society and every cultural and political institution that exists. We need that to be same with African Americans and women's rights, et cetera. It needs to be part of that whole curriculum.
Tracy, if you had one wish in terms of acceptance in the gay community for the next year, 5 years, 10 years, what would that wish be?
You know, my first wish is that the internalized homophobia and transphobia that exists within us as individuals, but also even within our own community, there's infighting. Like a lot of gay and lesbian people don't accept bisexual people or transgender people. Like, we as a community need to be more accepting of one another. And then internally, the homophobia and transphobia we are taught from near birth. If we come with self-acceptance to the world, it makes our whole work more doable.
Yeah.
I certainly want society to change and laws to change and to have a National Equality Act that's passed the House but isn't coming from a vote in the Senate. We need legislation. But African Americans learned a long time ago that legislation isn't what's going to make change. You have to also have internal community work as well as societal acceptance. You can't force people to be better people by law. So I do hope that our community grows stronger internally, that we use this time under Trump to realize that we have more in common than we do different, and that then in 2 to 4 years, once maybe the administration changes, we can leap forward with some of the rights that are almost there.
So it is Pride Month, and you should be proud, and I'd like to commend all the people who have the strength and the courage to speak up and not remain silent. It is such a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Tracy Boyham, again, publisher of Chicago Reader newspaper, owner and co-founder of Windy City Times. And the books are available where?
Certainly Women and Children First Bookstore. Support your independent bookstores and Unabridged Books, but also online. I'm not going to say the company name, but we all know it.
Well, you can buy them there. What's the website that if people want more information on all this stuff, Tracy, where should we send them?
WindyCityTimes.com, ChicagoReader.com for the Pride Party that's coming up June 23rd. ChicagoGayHistory.org has my oral histories and includes information about this book.
Thanks, Tracy. Really appreciate it. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news. And then Eric Zorn joins us. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.